What Europe's troubles tell us about America's economy. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio. Investors around the world have Europe on their mind today, with the European Central Bank widely expected to make new moves tomorrow to stimulate the economy there. BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us from London. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Mark.
So for anyone listening now who has maybe heard something about slow growth in Europe, a bit about negative interest rates, but maybe aren't following Europe day to day, what's important to understand about the big picture economics there and what central bankers there are seeing?
What the ECB, the European Central Bank, is really focusing on is deflation. If you do then get people setting wages and prices in the expectation that we're going to have continued deflation, then that can discourage consumers from spending, and it can also aggravate debt problems that would further undermine a recovery that's really not that great.
So you're talking about the deflation worries. In the US, we worry about wage growth not being where we want it to be. A strong dollar makes things tricky for a lot of our big companies, and also the volatile stock markets. How does that compare with some of what the other big worries are in Europe?
The things that the US and the Fed in particular are worrying about are not totally different from the ECB. It's just that they're not quite as acute. So the concern that wages aren't growing as fast as you might like means that there are concerns that inflation might not get up to the Fed's target as quickly as they would ideally like. Things are a lot more severe on this side of the pond than they are where you are.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Mark.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks up in global trading. The UK shares up 0.5%. Germany shares up 1.2%. Asian markets closed mixed, and Wall Street futures point to a higher open. You could watch an NFL game on Facebook next season. Facebook says it's talking with the league about rights to stream games live as the social media company pushes further into video. The NFL has said for a while that it's talking with potential digital partners to open the door for live streaming its Thursday night matchups. Amazon and Verizon, other potential suitors. That's story first in Variety from the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting. Mitchell Hartman has more.
Facebook is already a very popular place to watch video, says S&P analyst Scott Kessler.
100 million hours of video are watched daily on Facebook. 100 million hours.
And he says live streaming sporting events, which unfold in real time, is especially attractive because it grabs eyeballs and holds them. People want to know who wins. But any live web stream can do that. Why Facebook? Well, let's take a typical Thursday night football game.
In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
Watching on Facebook, there could be parallel conversations about the game, crowdsourced stats, shared videos of other touchdowns. Even eventually, says tech analyst Scott Scron at IDC,
being able to sit in the room with your friends, even though you're not physically there, and watch a program.
The NFL's decision on who gets to jump into this brave new live streaming world is expected soon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We're going to take a look now at a national story unfolding in Miami, but it's not about the presidential debates the city's hosting this week. What's at stake here is more about inequality, environment, and economics. A story in The Atlantic this week looks at what's happening to Miami as sea levels rise, threatening to swamp what is now prime waterfront property. Matt Vassilogambaros is senior associate editor there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Matt, there's still plenty of waterfront development happening in Miami, of course, but when you were there, you found growing interest in buying into neighborhoods on higher ground, which is creating challenges for the low-income residents who live in these neighborhoods now. How's all this affecting them?
Well, when those low-income residents, primarily Haitian immigrants, when they moved in, you know, there really wasn't a lot of thought given to high ground, low ground, sea level rise. But what developers have found over time is that these communities, and the one that I highlight is Little Haiti, is higher than certain more affluent areas like Miami Beach or Coral Gables or certain parts of the downtown area, which in a few decades will be underwater. And developers are looking to places that are higher so that a development can last maybe 100 years instead of just 20 or 30.
Now, we talk a lot about displacement that connects to gentrification, and that's something that's been happening for a long time. But this is displacement driven by climate change. How is that different in terms of how it affects low-income communities?
When it comes to, you know, moving during disasters, residents who have some money have more options. So when the water comes, and it will come, And these lower income folks are driven from their homes and gone to other places of the city that might be at lower elevations. They will have fewer options for housing. As time progresses and as sea levels continue to rise and new parts of the city are developed because they are at higher elevation, it will be the wealthier residents that will have the most options. City planners and city officials are looking at a city that won't look the way it is right now. Maybe a mile in could be the new shorefront. So they have to start thinking about the future. But also, you know, they're stuck in a way because there is so much money in seaside development. $10 billion right now in downtown Miami. So if you think about, you know, whether or not they want to think long term or whether they are thinking right now, you know, that's kind of an issue that they're debating with themselves.
Matt Vassalagambros with The Atlantic, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And finally, in a long-awaited matchup pitting human against computer, the machine is in the lead. The contest pits Google's artificial intelligence program against a celebrated human champion in the ancient board game Go. Go has far more possible board positions than chess, so getting a computer up to speed with a top human player requires that it perform something like human intuition. And that is a very tricky thing to get a computer to do, so mastering Go is something AI engineers have been intrigued by for some time. Google's program AlphaGo won the first game today, but it is a five-game match, so Go champion Lee Sedol still has a few chances to get humanity back on the scoreboard. We'll see what happens. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.